If you've already made a contribution by giving us a call at 244-9455, well, we want to say thanks. But if not, now is the time. And maybe it's been on your list of things to do this week. We'd like you to check that off this morning. So let me give you the number one more time. 244-9455. 217 is the area code. You can call and make a pledge. You may also do it online at the new pledge address that we've been using this week, which is willpledge.org. And if you do it, by the way, you will help us meet a challenge that has come in from the Deal family. How about that? They've listened to Focus for a long time. They enjoy the variety of topics and guests on the show. And they have promised that they would add $250 to our pledge total if we can hear from 20 people this morning during Focus 580. And I'm sure out there, there are at least 20 people that have been listening to the program for a while and have not made a pledge. Or maybe it's been, maybe you have in the past and it's been a while. We would hope that we'd hear from you this morning. 244-9455. Go to willpledge.org. And also a little later on, we have a very special incentive for you to pledge involving our guest here this morning. So we'll tell you about that. David Sinnoh is here. He's with us once a month on the program. It's always on a Friday. He is a clinical professor of finance at the University of Illinois. And for some time now, he's been stopping by here on Fridays to talk a little bit about personal finance. The way we do this is he starts out and has some comments, usually on some kind of investment or economic or financial topic. And then we open up the phone lines. And if you have questions about whatever it is that he's about to discuss, that's okay. But also other questions are welcome. Questions could be on other aspects of financial planning, on investing, paying for your kids' college, paying for your retirement. Any and all of that is certainly fine. So we'll get going here with Dave, and then we'll give you a chance to call in and ask questions. Well, glad to have you here. It's been a while. I haven't seen you for a while.
Well, that's right, Dave. I guess someone in your position, you know, can simply vacation all of the time, have a great time, while some of us actually have to keep our nose to the grindstone, work. You know that story.
That's right.
Well, good morning. And of course, as always, it's a genuine pleasure to be with you. I'm going to issue a very unusual challenge this morning to our listeners. Here's what I'm willing to do for any listener who calls in and pledges $250 during the time that I'm going to be on the air with you this morning. I will personally invite you to a very sophisticated private seminar, which will be housed and provided for at the WILL headquarters in their fancy conference room. So if you haven't seen those facilities, you should come over anyway. It's going to be a two-hour presentation. There'll be some time for questions and answers, but it's going to cover investments, tax planning, some issues on estate planning, some issues that you should know about real estate, several items, and I think you will find it very interesting. It is sophisticated, and I think you will find it rewarding. But the entry fee is $250. The seminar will be held on a Saturday morning in December 2005, so before tax season starts. We'll have some tax tips for you at that particular time. As I say, we'll figure out a Saturday morning in December, probably early to mid-December, before Christmas time and holiday season. And that's going to be a two-hour seminar at WIL. I'll be speaking. I'll provide the materials. I think you'll find it extremely informative. But the entry fee, it's a $250 donation to WILL.
That's an exceptional incentive, but this offer is good only for the next 50 minutes. So we need to hear from you this morning, and we will take a little break later on. You may not want to go to the phone and call right here where Dave is talking and doing his little presentation here, but there will be time, and we would hope that we would hear from a lot of people because it seems that it gets more and more difficult. And the decisions that you make on your financial planning are very important, has obviously a lot to do with your future, your financial security. And I think this would be a great opportunity to get some basic advice and learn some things and review your own financial situation. So that's the deal. $250 pledge. Give us a call this morning and you can take part in a seminar. So.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the stock market. Let's talk a little bit about interest rates. And it's been, frankly, a very brutal month for the stock market investor. In spite of strong corporate profits at many public companies, in fact, stock market valuations overall have really dropped about 5% since the last time we visited. Now, apparently, there are two major forces at work here, simultaneously placing downward pressure on our stock markets. The first, of course, is inflation. Inflation at both the consumer level and the wholesale level really have surged in the last 30 to 60 days. Just in September alone, up almost 2% for the month. Now, we all know, of course, that oil was a major culprit, but the wholesale price of almost every major industrial commodity has moved in lockstep. That means moving up. Currently, the United States, with 4% of the world population, burns 25% of the world's oil. And of course, since global oil demand is increasing faster than available supply, long-term prospects for an easing of oil prices, well, at least in my opinion, I don't think they're going to go down a whole lot. It's certainly problematic at best. And as a result, it's not surprising that we see tremendous increases all across the board. And really, when we look at retail inflation over the last year, for example, we're seeing retail inflation increasing approximately 5%. And to add injury to insult, that inflation really eats into our investment returns. For example, if we hold a certificate of deposit at our local bank, and the CD perhaps is earning as much as 4% interest, our after-tax rate that we really take home may only be 3% because we're giving maybe a quarter of it away to the federal government. We all know that's an insatiable appetite. So now we're netting 3% on our investment after tax, and because of inflation running at 5%, well, it doesn't take a Philadelphia lawyer very long to just figure out and recognize that we're actually in a negative situation. So simultaneously, few of us can say that our after-tax earnings are growing at a faster pace than inflation, which really would require salaries, for example, and investments to increase annually at about 7%. And obviously, we know that's not occurring. So it's a very, very tough time out there. Now, obviously, this state of affairs has not escaped the concerned face of the Federal Reserve and Alan Greenspan in particular, especially with the announced retirement of Greenspan in the coming months. In an attempt to control inflation, the Federal Reserve has increased, of course, the target Fed funds interest rate 11 times from the former low of 1% to its current target rate of 3.75%. And the vast majority of economic professionals concede that this Fed funds rate will be raised again by another quarter of a percent up to 4% at the next Fed meeting. Now, as many of us know, the Fed funds rate is really the rate that banks borrow from each other overnight based upon whether or not the bank has excess reserves on hand at the end of their business day. Now, when it costs more for banks to borrow from each other, those interest rate increases, well, you know the answer. They're going to be passed on to you and I as consumers in terms of car loans, home equity loans, business loans, and even credit card rates. The theory being is consumers, maybe if interest rates keep going up, will slow down our vast consumer spending, but at the same time, the economy will continue to grow. And that's what we call a soft economic landing, where consumers cut back a little bit, but because of the overall growth curvature of the markets themselves and of the GDP itself, we would have a soft landing. Now, stocks, on the other hand, have really been hit hard because of two major reasons. First, it costs companies more to borrow money or refinance their debt as interest rates move up. What does this do? It depresses profits. And second, there is the theory of relative attraction. Instead of investing in the stock market, which of course is a volatile ride under even sometimes the best of circumstances, maybe I ought to just park my money in treasuries or CDs where rates are creeping up to more palatable levels. For example, many local banks in central Illinois are offering CD rates in the 6 to 9 month category, in the area of 4.25%. I've seen them as high as 4.6%. Money market rates are in the threes. And also, it's important to take a look at the 10-year Treasury rate, which is now currently about 4.5%. Now, I don't recommend anyone investing in a 4.5% 10-year rate. But a 4.5% 6, 9, and 12-month rate, if you need a place to park your money, certificates of deposit, and short-term treasuries make a lot of sense. The reason I want to talk briefly about the 10-year treasury rate, which I said is approximately 4.5%, often mortgage rates are tagged to the 10-year treasury. And you look at the 10-year treasury and you add about 1.75% to 2%, and that's going to give you a pretty darn good idea of what long-term mortgage rates are doing in the economy. Just as an example, locally, as of yesterday, 30-year mortgage rates were quoted between 6 and 6.125%. 20-year mortgage loans were at 6%, 15 about 5.75%, and 3-year adjustable rate mortgages, which I frankly don't recommend at this point in time, were about 5.875%. You can see that these rates are significantly higher than they were just 3, 6, even 9 months ago. And it looks to me, based upon Greenspan, before he's going to retire from the Federal Reserve, he's looking at least one, perhaps two more interest rate increases. So I don't see mortgage rates settling down from their 6% current area. Now, if you're a California resident, based upon these mortgage rates that exist today, if you are a person who's in the marketplace looking to buy a home, and you take a look at the average price of a California home, which is now about $350,000, guess what? Only 25% of those California home buyers who are in the market can afford a conventional 80% 30-year mortgage. That's how out of hand things are in the California residential market. But for the first time, I sense some cooling off out there. Houses aren't selling 11 seconds after they are listed. Indeed, they are now selling 2 to 6 weeks after they are listed, and some properties are even staying longer on the market. So we'll stay tuned, but I don't really see interest rates moving down. And if you are a lender, if you're sitting on cash, not bad to park your cash at 4.5 to 4.6 for 6 to 9 months. Well, finally, I promise each month to provide you my report on the couch potato portfolio. Everybody remembers that portfolio. It's a 100% indexed portfolio in 8 different asset classes, including the S&P 500, large value, small companies, small value, the mid caps, which are the S&P 400, REITs, which are real estate investment trusts, the total international index, and emerging markets. I call it the couch potato because it's all passive investing. You put your money in it, and then you sit back on the television and watch and eat potato chips on the couch. You watch TV, and you don't worry about your money. Well, interestingly enough, that couch potato portfolio was up in excess of 6% last time we visited. But for you stock market investors, you know it's been a difficult ride, really, since September 30th, how fast things can change. And as of yesterday's close, that close yesterday around 3 o'clock, where were we at? Well, including dividends, the couch potato portfolio was up 2.3% for the year. My, my, it had given back about 3.5% of its overall total return in just 1 month. So you can see even a well-diversified portfolio in short periods of time can certainly experience substantial volatility. But nevertheless, we're still holding our breath. We're still above water year to date. It's up 2.3% through yesterday's close. So there you have it, David, a challenge to see if anyone wants to come and hear something for 2 hours can stand to listen to my voice perhaps for 2 hours. But I will tell you this. I'll pledge to you that it will be a worthwhile endeavor. And, of course, secondly, I'd be delighted to tackle any of the questions that our listeners have this morning.
All right. If you would like to talk with David Sinnoh this morning here on Focus 580, you dial up the number, the usual one, and that is 333-9455. That's the one that we always use, and no one's going to shake you down for a pledge. It would be nice if you'd pledge, but that's not required. You want to talk to Dave? 333-9455. Also, we do have that toll-free line, and that one is good. Anyone, any place that you might hear us, if it would be a long-distance call, you're listening around Illinois or Indiana, that is 800-222-9455, and we have a couple of people here ready to go, starting us off. We have a caller in Urbana, and they are on line one right here. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with bank CDs is that they want to set it up so the money is automatically rolled over when the CD expires if you don't tell them otherwise within 10 days of the expiration. And I'm, you know, sometimes life can get complicated at all the wrong times. Just to simplify life, what I just did with a CD that we just bought was to put it, mark it in Quicken to remind me that it was going to be coming due. But I'm wondering if there are some better ways to keep track of that so that you don't have the money roll over if you don't want it to.
That's a great question, and banks will automatically send you a renewal notice that it's rolling over, and yes, things get lost in the mail, and suddenly my 4.5% rate devolves back to a 2.5% rate, and you wonder what happened. So that's the dilemma. Now, one of the things that you can do, and some banks will accept, you have to check with the policy of the bank at the time that you take out the certificate of deposit. You also provide them in writing a letter that says that you do not want your certificate of deposit to be rolled over at the time of its maturity, that all proceeds are to be placed in your checking or money market account. So that would be my solution to the problem, so that you don't run into the issue of having a rollover certificate of deposit potentially at a lower interest rate. Okay. You think you can handle that?
Yeah, I can do that, actually, but it's already purchased, so can I do it now?
Well, certainly call your bank now while you're thinking about it and say you would like to provide them a letter in writing, and this is not an email. This is actually a documented written letter to that effect.
Okay, thanks.
All right. My pleasure.
Go to someone here on a cell phone. Line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have some of our portfolio in a REIT account, and we keep hearing about the bubble bursting. Is it time to move that to something else?
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. With reference to your REIT, are you in a REIT mutual fund, or do you simply own one or two REITs that are traded on the New York Stock Exchange?
Mutual fund.
All right. So you have a REIT mutual fund that has a number of companies which essentially buy real estate and manage real estate. And your question is the bubble about to burst, or has it burst, or is it time to pare down that position, especially since we've had such a gigantic run-up in REITs over the last 5 years?
Right.
All right. Now, REITs earlier this year were up almost 12%. The typical mutual fund REIT index was up, as I say, about 12%. The Vanguard REIT, as of yesterday's close, was up about 3.5%. So it has already had a pretty significant pullback. But nevertheless, over the last 5 years, on a compounding annualized return, REITs have returned somewhere around 18%. So my real question to you is, what percentage of your overall investment portfolio is devoted to REITs?
I knew you were going to ask.
I knew. So you knew I was going to ask that question.
I don't know. I think it's 8%.
All right. Well, 8 isn't too bad. Is the REIT inside a tax-deferred investment like an IRA or a Roth IRA or a 401k, or is it just after-tax money that you've devoted to this REIT?
It's in a 401k.
All right. So that makes it a lot easier, because when you move money out of a REIT or out of any mutual fund or taxable investment, but you're sitting inside a 401k, you've deferred the gains. So you don't pay any immediate tax, so you can move to a money fund. So in that 401k, I feel more comfortable with a 5% allocation.
Okay.
So I think maybe paring back to 5 would not be unreasonable. As far as jettisoning your 401k, the minute I would tell you to do that, the 401k will recover and it will go up 10 or 15%. The truth of the matter is that no one knows, but I wouldn't feel uncomfortable with you paring back that position to 5%.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. My pleasure.
Thanks for the call. Well, we have someone else here that we will get to in just a moment, and I hope that that person will not mind waiting. We'll indulge and ask them to be patient while we make just another invitation for people who are listening to call and support the station. Since this is a program, the theme of this program is investing. Let me try this argument on you. When you make a contribution to WILL, it's kind of like an investment. At least we encourage people to think about it that way, because you are investing in future programming that you will hear on this radio station. That's the return on the investment, the initial investment when you call 244-9455. You put in your money. But then we take that and we turn around and we turn that into programming. And we use it to pay salaries and we use it to pay the bill for the transmitter and we use it to pay our dues to National Public Radio and the other places that we get the programming. And we think that you will get back in the form of programming that you value many, many times more than what you put in. So that's the deal. Think about it that way. It's an investment in quality programming that you will receive over the next year. But now's the time. See, we're kind of coming down to the wire here. It's near the end of our fundraising effort here this week. So if you've been thinking about it, this has been on your list of stuff to do, right now would be a great opportunity to do it. We have some volunteers who will take the call. It will take maybe a minute or two. You can call 244-9455. 217 is the area code. You may pledge online if you like. Go to willpledge.org. Make your pledge there. Whatever way you want to do it, in whatever amount, we want to hear from just as many people as we possibly can to broaden the base of support for this radio station. It's your radio station. We want you to be more than just listeners. We want you to be active participants in public broadcasting, and that means being financial supporters as well. Jack Brighton is here with me in the studio. He is former producer of Focus, current often fill-in host when I'm too lazy to get here to do the show, and he is also the guy who oversees our web operation. And
I'm also a fan. I'm also a fan of the show. I love this show. Yeah.
And also standing by in Pledge Central, one of our very talented television documentary producers from WILL TV, the Allison Davis. I was going to say the lovely and talented, but I shouldn't. Allison Davis Wood, she is in Pledge Central. How you doing, Allison?
I'm doing great. That's very nice of you, David. And it's very active in here in Pledge Central, and we want to keep it that way. We're getting lots of calls coming in, and we have some wonderful challenges going on, including this one from the Marshak family, which has been extended until noon. And we have 62 people that have called in, and we need to get to 80 people, and they'll make an additional pledge of $500. So we're really hoping people that are enjoying all this financial information with David Sinow can go to the phone at 244-9455 and make a pledge. We accept a Visa, MasterCard, and Discover, American Express. So it's really easy to do. We just have a few questions for you, and then we can take your pledge. And we also have another challenge, and it's from Paul and the Deal family. And if we get 20 pledges during Focus 580 today, we will get an extra $250. So plenty of reasons to pledge, including that wonderful challenge with David Sinow to be able to come to his seminar in early December. So go to the phones now, 244-9455.
Now, do I understand correctly that, David, you are going to give a two-hour seminar on a variety of financial topics to folks who pledge $250 during Focus this morning? Where do I sign up?
Jack, you couldn't have said it better.
Well, actually, I know the answer to the question. You sign up by making a pledge at our pledge line, 244-9455. 217 is the area code. If you want to make it a collect call, that's fine, too, if you're calling long distance. 217-244-9455 to get in on the deal that that David Sinow was offering, the financial seminar, two-hour seminar, to be held at the WILL building in early December, Saturday morning. We'll figure out a date. And also, I mean, we've got a lot of money on the table from these challenges. I mean, $500 in one challenge and another $250. If we get 20 calls during Focus this morning before noon. That's what's on the table. So we hope you will help us make that happen by making a pledge on our website, willpledge.org. You can do that there or call 217-244-9455.
All right. Thank you very much, Allison and Jack. And we will check back with you again at the end of the program. We have a caller who has been patient here, and we will get to them. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is David Sinnoh. He's clinical professor of finance at the University of Illinois. And once a month, always on a Friday, he's here. We do these programs on personal finance. So if you have questions about investing in money management, give us a call. And I know Dave will do his best to help you out. 333-9455 is the number to call here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's the caller in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yes, I have a 401k plan at work with a limited number of choices, and the fund I picked is a Euro-Pacific International Stock Fund because it kind of fits in with my other investments, but it does not include any emerging markets. So I opened an emerging markets index fund, but I'm not sure what the percentage should be in that one compared to the Euro-Pacific fund.
Well, I think the Euro-Pacific fund, you want to have the majority of your money in that particular fund.
Uh-huh.
So if you were going to devote, for example, 20% or 25% of your total portfolio to the international arena, mm-hmm. I would think that 75% of it should be devoted to the Pacific Euro type of investments and only about 25% of it. So
okay.
25 cents on the dollar
uh-huh.
to emerging, 75 cents to the other international positions. You have to remember that emerging markets, while it provides a great deal of diversification to an overall portfolio, it is an extraordinarily volatile index.
Yeah.
And you certainly want to dollar cost average into it.
Yeah.
Unless it suddenly took a 30 or 40% drop, then you want to load up the truck and place more money into it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate the good show.
Okay. Well,
thank you so much.
Let's continue. We have somebody else here also on the cell phone on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, I have a financial advisor, and he is recommending some oil and gas leases. We have a fairly good retirement portfolio. It would not be a large portion of the whole portfolio, a single digit. And I just wanted to know what your impression was of that. One reason that it's being recommended is that we sold some, actually some saving bonds and need to use the, you know, it has that feature where you can use your, I'm trying to think of how to describe it, you get a you get some tax relief from it.
Okay, so your question really is, should you take these monies and invest them in oil and gas leases?
Now, I just wondered your impression, how much risk is involved in the oil and gas lease
investment. I think a tremendous amount of risk is involved in oil and gas leases. I would ask your financial advisor what the commission that he or she is receiving for offering you this choice. That would be my first question. And number two, what experience does your financial advisor have with returns and handling these oil and gas leases over what period of time? Because there's a big difference between owning or investing in an actual lease and purchasing, for example, an index fund or some type of investment, which is really a lot of different companies in the oil and natural gas business. So you've got a much more volatile investment, it seems to me, with an oil and gas lease. But I would be very curious to know the commission structure of that oil and gas lease. And if you are working with a promoter of an oil and gas lease, what is the experience of the promoter, and what is the track record of the promoter/developer of these oil and gas leases? So I'd want to know a lot more information. Were you given a prospectus?
Yes.
So you were given a prospectus. Was this a private prospectus as opposed to a public prospectus?
You know, that I can't answer. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, because in the prospectus itself, you can tell pretty quickly whether this is something under Regulation D of the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is really a private offering as opposed to a public offering. My guess is what you're being offered is some type of private offering in oil and gas leases, and I think you want to pay an awful lot of attention to the track record of the promoter slash developer. You also want to pay a lot of attention to what's called the source and use statement, and that is where are the sources of the funds coming from and what are the uses of those funds. Is every dollar actually going in to buy oil and gas leases, or is a substantial amount of it being siphoned off, if you will, into other what I'll call soft costs which don't benefit you? Finally, there should be an attorney's opinion in this offering memorandum, which explains the taxability of this particular investment. So you want to be very, very careful, have all of that explained to you. You never want to get involved in an investment that you don't thoroughly understand. So there's some more research and some more work that needs to be done before you just hand over your dollars and invest in this golden opportunity. Okay?
Okay, those are great suggestions. Thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you. And we have another cell phone caller. This person is on our line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My husband and I are retired, and we were recently advised to invest in EIA's equity indexed annuity. Would you comment on this sort of investment?
Well, it's very interesting because I'm doing a lot of research right now on equity indexed annuities. Now, which kind of program are you in? Do you understand the program that is being offered to you? Because there are literally scores of different programs.
I don't really understand it.
Okay. Well, what it is an insurance company offering you a variable annuity, and your return is tied to some index, typically the S&P 500 index. Some variable annuity programs even tell you that you can never lose any of your initial investment. Is that the way yours is set up?
That's what we understood. Yeah.
All right. And what they tell you is in these particular programs that you earn the return that the market provides you in this particular index. Is that sort of your understanding also?
That's right.
Okay. Typically, these variable annuity programs come with very substantial surrender charges over very long periods of time. Often, if you want to exit the investment, there will be surrender charges for up to a 10-year period of time. So have you investigated the surrender charges with your particular program?
No, we haven't.
You want to ask that question.
Okay.
Secondly, in many of these programs, let's just say that you invested $25,000 and you were fortunate and suddenly your position was $30,000. Some of these programs offer the opportunity to mark to the market and say, okay, I want to mark right now to the market $30,000, and I don't want my investment ever to go lower than $30,000. So you want to check to see if your program allows you to choose a specific time, often two or three times during the year, where you can lock in a return. Some programs have this feature, some don't. And I certainly wouldn't be interested in any program unless it had that particular lock feature. So you want to ask that question as well. Also, many of these programs, in spite of large gains in the market, limit you over any 5 to 10 year period of time to a certain dollar amount. So, for example, let's say that you invested the $25,000 and suddenly you doubled your money and your position was worth $50,000, but not so quick. The insurance company might limit you to a certain compounded rate of return, and thus you wouldn't get the $50,000. Maybe you would only be at $35,000. So what I'm saying is that there's a lot of bells and whistles to understand, and you really need to discuss this with someone who is not earning a commission from offering you this product. For the most part, I'm not very excited about them. I'd rather just simply be in a very tax-efficient index with my money and pay my taxes as I go, because ultimately, if you do have gains and you pull your money out, it's going to be subject to ordinary income tax as opposed to the capital gains rate, and thus you may end up with less money after tax, even though you thought you were deferring money in your variable annuity. So there's a lot to understand about these particular products.
All right. Thank you. We have maybe about 10 minutes left in this first hour of Focus 580. That's our monthly program on personal finance and money management. David Sinnoh is our guest. He's clinical professor of finance at the University of Illinois. And I know he'll do his best to answer your questions. You have some particular investment puzzle that you're thinking about, trying to decide what you're going to do with your money. This is one place you can get some advice. Now, obviously, we want you to think very carefully, do a lot of research. Don't just go on what Dave says, but this can be part of your research process for figuring out what you want to do with your money. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we have a number of callers, and we'll talk next with someone in Charleston, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I have a 403B that I'm no longer with the institution and would have the option to roll it over. I was considering putting it into one of your, like, Vanguard type of index where you got, you know, various classes of
sure.
assets. My question is there a disadvantage to putting it into an individual IRA as a rollover, or how should that be done, or I'm better off with a 403B and just kind of balancing my assets around it?
Well, you are no longer employed by the plan sponsor of the 403B?
Correct.
All right, so you can't add any more money to your 403B, and then very frankly, there's no reason not to roll your money over into an IRA. That would be a tax-deferred rollover. You could do that at any mutual fund company, bank, any type of financial institution that accepts rollover IRAs, and that's almost everyone. So that is a tax-deferred rollover. And then you would have the ability to literally access carte blanche all of the investment choices that are offered by that IRA plan sponsor. So by all means, my view would be if you are limited in your current choices with your 403B, you would be better off self-directing in your rollover IRA.
So then when it comes to actual retirement time, withdrawing your money, there is no advantage, disadvantage of one or the other then?
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. You can access that money starting at 59 and a half without a penalty. You could really start accessing it a bit earlier if you were willing to take out periodic payments, but most people aren't. By waiting to 59 and a half, you avoid the 10% penalty, of course. And then really you should start accessing the money by the time you reach 70 and a half.
Okay. And the other question I had was, I was noticing an individual who has money with University of Illinois in their retirement 403Bs that they don't seem to have very much in the way of options, various companies that you can put your money with, like Vanguard per se is.
Well, Vanguard really is not a choice, but on the contrary, they have some excellent choices. They have the carte blanche access to all the Fidelity funds, and as well as TIA CREF, which has been a major provider for the educational community for many, many years, as well as T. Rowe Price. So I think there are a number of good alternatives with a 403B, and if people are not participating in a 403B because they don't like the choices, that's very, very short-sighted. It's an excellent method of saving for your own retirement, especially if you are in a program where your sponsor can sponsor a 403B program.
Okay, thank you.
Right, my pleasure. Thanks.
And just for the benefit of that man, and he may know this, but for anybody else who'd be thinking about this, the one thing, and you've counseled people on this before, if you're going to roll over money like that, you need to make sure that this money never passes through your hands.
You don't want it in your hands,
no.
David. You're a good learner. It's a trustee-to-trustee transfer. Yeah,
otherwise, if you get this money,
well,
they will
tax
20%.
You. They'll take 20% right out of the box, and then if you go ahead and even roll it over, you've got to replace all of that money. So to avoid the 20%, yes. No
all right.
question.
All right. To Bloomington, Indiana, line 2 next. Hello.
Hi. I'm puzzled by statements made by Federal Reserve governors about inflation. And it's true that rising oil prices have caused inflation. They have caused inflation in the cost of energy. But that inflation is based in short supplies of energy. It's not caused by too much money chasing that energy. So that inflation does not apply to the rest of the economy, and it seems to me as if that those excessive oil prices are simply a drain. Money is being drained out of our economy. Most of it's sent overseas. How can that be an inflationary problem in the rest of the economy, and how could that problem be solved by raising interest rates?
Well, you certainly have hit on something, that one of the causes of inflation are the rapid rise in commodities, but it goes beyond oil. We've seen this across the board in all commodities. And, of course, since oil is used in so many commodities and so many building products, it does have an impact. I think the most recent estimates that I've seen, that about 30% of the estimated increase in inflation is due directly to oil, energy, etc. So there are still tremendous underlying pressures for inflation outside of that energy sector. So it's just not oil, it's just not natural gas, it's just not scurrying for that. And you're absolutely right, we're buying all of this oil at very high prices, we're sending all of that money overseas, and you know what they're doing with that money? They're turning right around and funding our deficit by buying our U.S. treasuries.
Yeah.
That's really what's happening with the money. So in another problem is we've got more of our federal debt in foreign hands. That bothers me. I think it probably bothers you as well.
Well, it certainly does. And as we raise our interest rates, they will buy more of our paper.
Well, that's right, because it's more attractive.
Yeah.
It's more attractive. So your points are well taken. You're right on point, and you're preaching to the choir.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. We'll go to Savoy for another caller. This is line 3. Hello.
I have a question for David, and that is he mentioned some time ago about I-bonds as being a good investment. However, we have the money that we would like to invest in I-bonds is in an IRA, and it's with Vanguard, and Vanguard will not use money from IRAs or will not invest in I-bonds for you. Is there some way that we could roll that money into some other organization, or is there some way of investing in I-bonds with money in an IRA?
Now, as I understand it, I'd have to go to the Vanguard website, but I'm pretty certain that they have a mutual fund, which is a Vanguard Inflationary Bond Index, which is very, very popular. So I'm a little bit confused. Are you on the brokerage side of Vanguard, or are you on the mutual fund side of Vanguard?
Actually, we have both.
All right, but I believe on the mutual fund side of Vanguard that Vanguard does have an inflationary protection bond mutual fund, which you should be able to access through your IRA. So I'm surprised to hear that you're having problems accessing that with your funds. I'm wondering if it's a problem of going from the brokerage side to the mutual fund side.
No, I think that perhaps we're talking about two different things. Rather than investing in a mutual fund, why wouldn't you just own the I-bonds themselves?
Because that you have to do through their brokerage arm specifically. So those dollars would have to be on the brokerage side of Vanguard. And frankly, I usually operate on the mutual fund side of Vanguard. So what you really need to do is call back Vanguard and say, look, if I have IRA money and I'm on the brokerage side of Vanguard, will you purchase for me I-bonds? Have you asked that specific question?
No, I haven't.
That's the question that you need to ask. That's the acid question. And I think you'll find that the answer is yes. They'll charge you a slight fee, but I believe they will do that for you.
Okay. What would be the advantage of doing the mutual index bond fund over having the I-bonds?
Well, I think it's an issue of how comfortable you are, and it's really not an issue of diversification. It's an issue, really, of how much money that you have. If it's a small amount of money, it's probably easier to do it inside the mutual fund. If not, if it's a substantial amount of money, by all means, that you could buy the I-bonds.
I see. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you. Champagne is next. Line number 1. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Is that me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. I actually have a question about we're in TIAA CREF, and I have a question about what you were talking about a few minutes ago with the inflation or the index funds. Is the TIAA CREF index fund the kind that has that particular characteristic that you were talking about that you like?
Well, let's break down TIAA-CREF for just a moment. TIAA is really the fixed income side of TIAA-CREF. So you have a certain number of your dollars, and probably you have them at a fixed interest rate in TIAA.
Right.
CREF then really has done a very, very good job through their stock mutual funds. They really are stock mutual funds. They have CREF stock, CREF global, et cetera. And what they have really done is they have basically sort of indexed the entire stock market, both the U.S. markets and the world markets. And then they have put in a smattering of additional stocks trying to earn increasing returns. So I think what you will find is if you compare the CREF stock funds with the market indexes overall, that they have compared very favorably over a long period of time with the market indexes and at very reasonable expenses. Okay, so it's not a whole lot different than, for example, what Vanguard does, with the exception is that Vanguard breaks the market down into more deciles and more individual sectors of the market so that you can further diversify. But overall, I can't say anything but my accolades for the job that TIA and CREF have done over a long period of time.
Okay.
So I think if you are in TIA and CREF, that you should not move and you should stay there and continue with your strategy.
Okay. That's kind of what I wondered. I just wasn't sure. So thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
We are about the point we have to finish. There was a question here that came in a little earlier off the air. A listener had this question. And I've been listening to you long enough now, so I think I could answer it. But knowing the way you feel about wanting people to be long-term investors, the question is, with the market down, should you keep your money in the market or should you put it someplace else? And if so, where would you put it?
Well, what you're really asking is a question of asset allocation. And that is that at your particular age, are you properly diversified among all asset classes, both in fixed income and in the stock market? But the minute you feel comfortable with a certain percentage of your money in the stock market, I'm a long-term investor. This will pass. This is background noise as long as you are properly diversified. If you're just in high techs, if you're just in real estate, I'd get real concerned. But if I'm spread properly across all asset classes, then the question becomes is, should I have 50% of my money in the stock market or 40% of the money or 70% of the money? And that is an age-related question. Mm-hmm. That's really an age-related question. So, but even for people who are in their 60s or their 70s, I feel pretty comfortable with at least 40% of your funds in the stock market.
All right. Well, David Sinnoh, he is clinical professor of finance at the University of Illinois. And every month, always on a Friday, he is on this program. We talk about money management, something we built into our schedule because we know people will always have questions on this subject. And we wanted to have a regular opportunity for people to ask those questions. And we hope that you benefited by the kind of advice that Dave has given out. Maybe he's added, we hope, a little bit to your understanding of the economy and markets and how you can work those to your best advantage. If so, and if you're not a financial supporter of this station, well, we hope that you will change that right now, this morning, and give us a call and make a pledge. And particularly because Dave has offered, he's made a very generous offer. He has said that if someone will call in and make a $250 pledge, could even be more if you felt like it, but that's what we're asking for, a $250 pledge. He's offering to conduct an investment seminar here at WILL sometime in December so that it gets in before the end of the year and before the time when you're locked in for the tax year. It will cover a number of subjects, and I think that you will find it very useful. So two hours, he says he'll do it on a Saturday morning here at WILL and Campbell Hall from 10 to noon at a date to be named later. And we'll see how many people we can get interested in doing that. Again, $250. You call us at 244-9455. That's the number to call to pledge. And 217 is the area code. Also, you can go online at willpledge.org. Let's also talk with Allison Davis Wood. She's a documentary producer who works at WILL Television, and she is in Pledge Central. Can you give us an idea kind of how we're doing here this morning?
Well, we're doing really good, but we still need to get some work on these challenges. We're up to 66 on the Marshak Family Challenge, and we need to get to 80 pledges so that we can get that additional $500. So we're really hoping to hear from some more fans of Focus 580, some more fans of David Sinow, people that are appreciating all the information and advice that comes to you every day of the week. Here on AM 580. So go to your phones now at 244-9455 and make a pledge. We also have another challenge on the way from Paul Deal, and it is to add an additional $250 to our fund drive total if we can hear from 20 pledges during Focus 580. So go to the phones now. We have great volunteers here in Pledge Central waiting to talk to you. They just have a few quick questions, and you can put it on your Visa, MasterCard, Discover or American Express, or you can make a pledge online at willpledge.org. Willpledge is one word, and maybe you're listening through your computer, and this would be an easy way for you to make that pledge right now.
Yeah.
But we'd love to hear from some more folks this morning.
We certainly would. We're now raising the money that will pay for programs next year. That is in the next fiscal year, the one that begins in July of next year. And one thing that we can be certain of is the costs of running the station, paying the power bill, paying our dues to National Public Radio, we know that those costs will continue to go up. We also have reason to believe that the money that we receive from the state of Illinois and from the federal government will continue to go down. The only place that we can go to make up the difference if we're going to try to maintain the level of quality that you depend on, and even try to find ways to improve the service, the only place we can go to make up that difference is to listeners. And right now, 47% of the money that it takes to run this station comes from listeners, from individuals and families, people all around central Illinois and all around the rest of Illinois and western Indiana and some places even further than that. People who depend on us when they go and they turn that radio on, who want there to be Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, whatever programs you listen to, the market reports are coming up to a market report, folks who depend on us to be there when they turn the radio on. Well, we're now depending on you to help keep this station strong. We'd like you to give us a call, 244-9455 and 217, the area code. Also, you can go online at willpledge.org and be a supporter of AM 580. And we want to say thanks very much. The broadcast today is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign. Locally owned and operated, serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. The broadcast also made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, Champaign's exclusive Subaru dealer on Route 45 in Savoy. Online at wardenmartin.com. The number to call is 217-352-8910 for Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. We're going to break for markets and more of Focus, so stay tuned.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to under